Welcome to Tomra Talks Circular, the podcast exploring the circular economy. I'm your host, Mitu Mulan. Today is Earth Day, generally a day dedicated to raising awareness about environmental issues and promoting actions to protect the planet. So it's no surprise that we've decided to dedicate this episode to those game-changing moments with the potential to reshape the world, so-called tipping points. In environmental terms, tipping points are critical junctures where small adjustments can trigger big changes in natural systems. Think of it as a cascade effect. Once the element shifts, it initiates a chain reaction that can lead to substantial transformations, like the irreversible impacts of climate change, for example. But today, we're highlighting the positive ones, the ones capable of helping us reduce global emissions and transition towards a circular economy, much of what is already happening and working. In this episode, we're joined by Ben Dixon, a partner at Systemic, a company focused on system change. Ben collaborates with industry, government, and civil society to speed up the shift towards circular industrial production and consumption systems with a specific focus on plastics waste reduction. We're also joined by Micah Vitevin, a director at Systemic. Micah focuses on accelerating the energy transition by working with stakeholders along with value chains to create positive tipping points. She has deep expertise in direct electrification and the decarbonization of industrial sectors. Together, we'll explore what positive tipping points are. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Mithu. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Amazing to be here.
Our pleasure. Starting with the basics. Ben, ultimately, tipping points aren't just big challenges. They represent remarkable opportunities to correct course. Could you just explain what positive tipping points are and why Earth Day is an ideal time to discuss them?
First of all, it's great to be here. Thanks a lot for the invitation to be part of this podcast on such an important topic. You said it. So Systemic, we're a company, we're a B corporation, we're a company with a mission, and we bring our mix of analysis, advisory services, and action programs in the service of this mission to accelerate system changes that we need for the Paris Agreement and the Sustainable Development Goals. So we think a lot about tipping points. We did some research in 2023 together with the University of Exeter and the Bezos Earth Fund called the Breakthrough Effect, where we really tried to get under the skin of this topic of tipping points. It's our most downloaded report ever. So clearly other people also very, very interested in this topic. So what is a tipping point? I think, as you said it very well in the introduction, and I quite like the famous Malcolm Gladwell definition here, a tipping point is a magic moment when an idea, a trend, or a behavior crosses a threshold, tips, and spreads like wildfire. So that's Malcolm Gladwell, very famous book that he wrote about tipping points, and you know, very good way to really describe that and bring it to life. Now, the common narrative when we talk about climate change, you said it, like it's used in a negative way. So this global tipping point study that was released in 2023 identified five tipping points, negative tipping points, where we are closest to the tip. Things like the collapse of ice sheets in Greenland and the West Antarctic, the thawing of permafrost, the death of coral reefs, the collapse of oceanic currents. Highly concerning, very, very worrying non-linear effects of global climate change. And they put the big pressure on us, right? So we've got to accelerate our response to climate change because there's a risk of being too late if we trigger these negative tipping points. But as you said, that's not the focus for our discussion today because it's Earth Day. We want to talk about positive tipping points. I think a really helpful way for us to think about the acceleration that we need. So positive tipping points in this context arise when we have a set of conditions that allow new technologies or new practices to outcompete the incumbent technologies. And when we hit those positive tipping points, we trigger reinforcing feedback loops, kind of self-accelerating progress. And then those negative feedback loops that are slowing us down become, you know, start weakening. So what we see is we get more deployment of a technology solution, we get, you know, or a behavior change, more improvement, then even more deployment. And then we see how these positive tipping points reinforce themselves. Very exciting concept, and not just a concept because we've seen this happening many times in the course of human history. You know, we talk about an S-curve, which describes the way in which adoption changes very rapidly once you hit this tipping point. And things like, you know, we look back on history, we look at cars, telephones, planes, all of them have shown these kind of S-curve where you have an accelerating adoption of a new technology. Final piece of good news is that as we look at history, we see these adoption curves are getting steeper and faster, which is exactly what we need, of course, if we're going to tackle this great challenge. So, you know, just one example, landline telephones took 71 years to reach the 50% adoption rate in the US. Mobile telephones took 14 years. And we see that phenomenon now that the technology adoption curves are getting faster. So I think that's it demonstrates the effect of positive tipping points and also the fact we should have some real hope here that we can accelerate our response. One last thing to say, Mithu, and then this question you asked me is why is it important for Earth Day? Two reasons I would give you. Firstly, it gives us, I think, grounds for optimism that the pace of change we need in response to climate change can accelerate to the speed that we need it to be at. And that really the idea that these positive tipping points could win the race against the negative tipping points that I described earlier. And that race I see is the challenge of our generation. I think secondly, it's not just an academic idea. This is a really practical framework. And Micah can talk a bit more about that. You know, this is really, once we understand this phenomenon, it gives us the tools that we need to actually accelerate, you know, hit those tipping points. So it's a very practical framework, the way we can focus our efforts, our advocacy, and our investments.
Okay, so before we jump to Micah, let me ask you one more question. What sort of conditions need to be reached to make this, as you said before, this magic actually happen?
And this is what we really dug into in this 2023 report, the breakthrough effect. We tried to really get under the skin of what does it take to create a tipping point? And the answer that we came up with was three A's, nice and easy to remember. So the first characteristic is affordability. Micah's going to talk a bit about how that's been triggered in the energy system. But, you know, once we hit that affordability threshold compared to those incumbent technologies, that's a key part of a tipping point, but not everything. The second one is attractiveness. So that's attractiveness to the customers, but also attractiveness in terms of the demonstrated, you know, positive effect of the new technology or the new approach. And then the third thing is accessibility. And if we can overcome some of those accessibility barriers, and that could be anything from the, you know, infrastructure required for electric vehicles, it could be to do with the workforce and skills that's out there to actually implement some of these changes. So, you know, once we overcome those accessibility barriers, then again, we see this tipping point being triggered. So three things, three A's: affordability, attractiveness, and accessibility. And we think if you can get that recipe together, then that's when you start to see these positive tipping points.
Well, it sounds easy enough, the three A's approach.
Easy to remember, not always easy to implement.
We have to start somewhere. So if we can remember, let's start with that. Micah, can you share a couple of practical examples of positive tipping points in action?
Yes, definitely. So building on what Ben just said, we need positive tipping points for these crucial net zero solutions to scale up. And we need them fast, right, given the speed at which climate change is happening. But let me start with some good news, which is the example of solar and wind power generation. These technologies we see are beyond their tipping points. They're scaling up exponentially. And we can see from them, from these technologies, that after tipping points it's reached, we see those reinforcing feedback loops happening. So we see economies of production scale. We see network and coordination effects that are also reinforcing the scale up of this technology. And importantly, we see a new setting of social norms. So that these are just examples that we see that these tipping points are real and are happening in the energy system. And we see the installed capacity of wind and solar is growing exponentially by 15 and 29% respectively year on year. That is very fast. And actually, if the trend would be to continue, there would be even more solar and wind power installed in 2050 than what is required by the net zero emission scenario from the International Energy Agency, the IEA. It's sort of one of the scenarios that the world looks at to see if we are on track for reaching net zero in 2050. But having said that, these positive tipping points are not happening yet in all net zero solutions that we need, at least not yet, right? And we need to bring these forward and accelerate them to avoid the worst effect of climate change. Okay, so you've talked about a couple. So we know that about solar and winds, and that is working. But what is the most exciting one that you believe could tip soon?
As was just mentioned, right? Tipping points might seem like this magical moment in time. And they might seem a little from the outside. But as Ben just said, we know sort of the conditions that should be met to create such a tipping point, to trigger such a tipping point. And what we want to do is to create those trigger points and those conditions and meet them sooner than what would happen if the world just would continue its course to usual. And that means we drill in and we find out what is holding this tipping point back. And also importantly, what action can be taken by stakeholders like regulators, like industry, like technology providers, like energy system, basically anyone in the system. And what should they do to make this technology more affordable, attractive, and accessible compared to the conventional option? And there is a recent example of work we just finished with that was supported by the Breakthrough Energy Foundation. What we did there, we looked at electrothermal energy storage. So this is one of the crucial technologies that you might have never heard of. What it does is it uses electricity from variable sources to heat up a material like bricks. And it can store that heat for long periods of time and release it at very high temperatures, enough to drive some of the industrial processes, when there is no variable renewables to electrify directly. So it's really a heat battery. And this is a technology that could mitigate up to 30 to 40% of current global gas use. It's being applied today, so there are pilots, but it's not affordable or accessible enough to really start scaling up. But from the work we did and from all the efforts of technology providers, the conversation we held, and others that are working on this, we now see it's very clear what could be done to create a tipping point. But also from the many stakeholder interactions we had so far, we already see interest and also emerging real actions by regulators, industrials, and technology providers that makes me confident that this tipping point for this technology would be within this decade, and I think even earlier.
Within this decade, okay. And so if I'm listening to you correctly, and this is something we've talked about on this program, it's really everyone coming together and doing their part to accelerate these positive tipping points to move in the right direction as quickly as possible. As you said, in this particular situation, within the decade.
Yeah.
But it's possible.
It can even be faster, right? It can also, in some regions, it's very region dependent. So in some regions, it can be in the next year or two. You say about everyone coming together, that sounds always quite tricky. I think that what we should do is know who should come together and what they should actually do and what step they could take. And being specific and focused on that, I think, is the way to trigger these positive tipping points.
Yeah, fair point. More action, less talk. I agree. Your report, and congratulations on the success of the report. Again, the Breakthrough Effect talks about three super leverage points that could create tipping points across various sectors. Can you elaborate on those?
Yes, sure. But let me first explain what a super leverage point is for those that have not read the report. And then I will share one example. In dynamic systems, cause and effect are usually disproportionate. And in systems that we're looking at, such as the energy system, these systems are very interconnected and dynamic. And that means that a small action can have an outsized effect on the system. And how that relates to tipping points is that tipping points in a certain sector and in a certain region can support cascade of tipping points in other sectors and regions. And a super leverage point is an action that triggers that very first tipping point that can lead to this cascade. But let me give you an example of a super leverage point to give it a bit more color. So what most scenarios indicate is that green hydrogen will have an important role to play in future energy systems, especially as a zero carbon feedstock. Green hydrogen is made from water and electricity in an electrolyzer, so it doesn't have any emissions if it's made from green electricity, which we assume for green hydrogen. But despite many ambitious announcements, a progress in scaling up the production of green hydrogen is stagnating. But now let's come to the super leverage point. We see that hydrogen today is already used in a production of fertilizer. Mandating even a very small fraction of green hydrogen in fertilizer production can be such a super leverage point. But of course, its mandate should be combined with tax breaks and other mechanisms to limit the impact on food prices. But if so, this relatively small fraction of green hydrogen in fertilizer production can create enough scale to bring down the cost of electrolyzers and other supporting systems to produce hydrogen. And thereby, it will bring down the cost of hydrogen enough that it can become an interesting, attractive option for use in other industries, like the steel sector, biorefining, or aviation fuel. So this is an example of a super leverage point where a relatively small step can have an outsized impact.
So then we've talked about solar, we've talked about wind, we're talking about green hydrogen. In the resources and recycling sector, how should we apply the concept of positive tipping points?
Yeah, a great question, Mithu's. I think, firstly, the themes that Mike has spoken about, particularly to do with heat batteries, which I've learned a lot about in the last year, and also the hydrogen economy, I think they have quite a lot of relevance, right? And I think as we look at the next generation of recycling technologies and also the fact that recycling companies are looking for ways to decarbonize their operations, I think both of those themes are actually very important for the resources and recycling sector. But I frame a couple of other ones here because I think we didn't cover this in our breakthrough effect report, but it's definitely front of mind for me. And you know, I lead the materials and circular economy platform for Systemic. We work a lot with companies throughout the value chain on you know, similar question. How do we accelerate our transition to a circular economy? How do we design out waste in our economy? And this is where we also need to be thinking about these positive tipping points. So I think if I just give the one that I think is probably the most exciting, which is for me, it's this digitization of our resources and recycling sector, digital information revolution that we're seeing now. And this really, for me, has got great potential to drive a positive tipping point, not just in the sector, but throughout the whole value chain for many of the materials and products that we use in our daily lives. My observation, so having worked with the sector for a few years now, it's been an analog system for a long time, right? So, you know, I think for those people in the sector, often things are working by fax machines, telephone calls was the main way people were placing business. And it continues to be a bit like that. You know, I think there's still a sense that, you know, the digital revolution hasn't always hit in every pocket of this industry, but now starting to accelerate. And some of the big announcements that we've seen in the last year or so, including Tomra, you know, your partnership with Polyperception, companies like Grey Parrot, you know, Recycle, iTrueCircle, many others who are bringing that kind of digital capability into this industry, and they're teaming up with incumbents. I think that's an extremely interesting play here. So you've got the technology providers making partnerships with the large incumbent players, and that I think is where we start to see some of the big changes happening. But you know, digitization on its own, great, but you know, so what? Why do I think that's a positive tipping point? And it's all very well to say, isn't it great, we'll digitize, but you know, so what? So I think this question of, I've heard the term waste intelligence a lot recently, and I quite like it. So we've got sensors, we've got artificial intelligence or machine learning trained cameras in many of our material recovery facilities now. And what they're able to do, increasingly getting good at this, is to provide this real-time identification and real-time sourcing of the waste items all the way back to the companies that made them and all the way forwards to what happens to them at the end of their life. So we've got a potential to create full transparency on the waste footprint, the carbon footprint, the real-life reuse and recycling rates for products and materials in our economy. And we've always been struggling with this, right? So the economists have told us that, you know, many of the environmental challenges we face are externality challenges because, you know, the environment bears the cost. We don't have transparency on who causes those pollution, and therefore, you know, the polluter gets away with it for free. If we build this waste intelligence system, we're really changing the story here. We're talking about internalizing those externalities. And in a very practical way, you know, many countries in the world are building out extended producer responsibility schemes for packaging, for electronics, for textiles. They've always struggled to find, you know, charge the idea of an extended producer responsibility scheme, they basically charge the producer to deal with their products at the end of life. It's a great idea, but they've always struggled to charge the real cost. Everything's based on averages. And now we start to see a waste intelligence world where we could charge the real cost. And what an amazing effect that would be. You think of a cascading tipping point, because you're then creating real incentives for companies to design their products better, to reduce the amount of material they're using, and to really focus on their end-of-life outcomes. So I think that's why I'm very excited about digitization and waste intelligence as a potential positive tipping point in this sector.
And that goes back to what Michael was saying before, really bringing the right parties in to do the right things at the right times. And this is a very concrete way that we could do this.
Completely agree. Because one of these little waste intelligence companies on their own, unfortunately, can't change the system. But if we pair them up across the full value chain and we bring the right policy incentives into play, like extended producer responsibility, then I think we're really looking at something very, very powerful.
Okay. I know we said we're focusing on the positive in today's episode, but we need to find the optimal balance between being optimistic about the technological advancements and staying realistic. How do we do that?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Missy. And I think for those of us that work in the sector, I think that's a real balancing act that we face. So I think, you know, climate change is very real. It's affecting people's lives every day. As I spoke about before, you know, the flip side of this conversation is the approaching risk of tipping into negative cycles around climate change, which will, you know, only accelerate those negative effects. So I think we have to be very cognizant of both the realities and the effects of the system that we currently live in, and also the really big changes that are needed in our economy. This is not a superficial, we're not putting lipstick on our economy in order to make it climate friendly economy. We really are talking about transformational change. So I think we have to be realistic that this is a very difficult task we have in front of us, and it's a fundamental change in our economy that we're talking about. But still, I do believe that we have got the tools that we need, and we do know how fast things can change if we put the right kinds of incentives and practices in place. So I think we've got to always walk forwards with that balance between the urgency, the realism around how much of a transformation is required, but at the same time recognizing that the technology is emerging and we're starting to understand and really believe in the accelerated change that's possible. So I guess I think it's a tightrope, huh? And I think we have to keep walking that tightrope and make sure that we're realistic, but also not getting lost in doom effects and negativity.
So would it be fair to reframe that a little bit, say that the technology is there and or emerging very quickly? What we need to get into place is the framework around it. So they're talking about EPR, general policy, general legislation. Would that be fair? And like I see, you're not quite sure if that's fair. Please jump in.
Yeah, it's easy to point to regulation often.
It was just an example. Yeah, there might be others as well.
Yeah, no. But we hear that often, that regulation should solve it. But what we see is that sometimes regulation is not enough. If you have a value chain that's not there, or that is too small and not mature enough to provide the products that are needed in the market at the right price points, that is not solved by regulation only. That is solved also by working together to fast track standardization, to bring together the right the parties, to create a very clear demand signal so producers can actually start changing. And then on those aspects, where you, of course, should be very careful with antitrust, but it's possible within those limits. It's very, regulation can have a supporting role, but it will not be the main driver. So I also see a clear role of others in the value chain moving forward. And then I haven't even touched on finance, but also financing. And the right types of finance can play an important role, for example, with guarantees to ensure that this very practical things like setting up a new value chain will happen.
Okay. Ben, would you like to add anything?
No, I think it's Micah said it really well. You know, we often say there's no system change without policy change. And I do think that policy does have an important role to play. But I think we also have to recognize that the policymakers are heavily influenced by progressive industry players, by companies that really step out there and you know, advocate for the right kinds of policies, also get things done and prove what's possible. So I think we also, everyone really has to take their own responsibility for this. And it is really a team sport if we're going to make these changes happen.
So, Micah, how optimistic are you feeling on this Earth Day 2024?
Yeah, that's always a good question. Let me give a personal answer, which is that I am hopeful. I'm working on this very, very complex problem now for almost 50 years. That is the problem of climate change. And there's many reasons to doubt that we will not solve it, and at least not solve it in time. So I know all that. But for me, that is not a helpful sentiment to work on this topic. And also, over the years, I do see change and momentum picking up and picking up fast. I have not mentioned in my examples that batteries and also EVs are growing today, right? And for the last years by more than 50% year on year. So there is real change, and also in sectors that a few years ago we thought would be decades away from any meaningful emission reduction, like the cement sector, we see now real momentum and real feasible solutions emerging and emerging at scale. So that makes me hopeful. Also, we know from the discussion we just had how fast change can be once a tipping point is reached, faster than exponential change is very hard to grasp as a human, but it's happening. It is happening as we speak. So I'm optimistic that with effort, because it won't go on this by itself, but that we can solve this issue, which I think is one of the toughest issues of our generation.
Ben, what about you?
How optimistic am I feeling on Earth Day? I think quite optimistic. We've got a lot of reasons for optimism. And I've been doing this for a while. I'm a bit older than Micah, so perhaps when I started working on sustainability, it was really quite a fringe exercise. And my parents and everyone was like, "Are you sure about this?" Now it really is a mainstream topic. You know, we get calls from chief executive level all the time. We get the best graduates from the best universities wanting to come and work for companies like Systemic and actually really get involved in solving these challenges. So from a point of view of, we really have moved to the next level of commitment, of awareness and of talent attraction into this challenge. The technology effects, I think, are very exciting now. And we see these emerging technologies and, the largest technology companies on the planet also asking, how can we bring our capabilities to help solve this problem? So I think there's lots and lots of reasons for optimism. And so I am optimistic on Earth Day. And I think it's been absolutely fantastic to come and share some of that with you, Mithu. So thanks again for having us on the podcast.
One final question. How are you spending this Earth Day? Micah, we'll let you ladies first. So we'll let you go first.
So Earth Day is a Monday. So that means I'll be behind my computer in meetings, having discussions to accelerate these tipping points. So that is how I spend my Earth Day,
continuing to work for the planet. Ben?
My Earth Day. So I have two daughters. And there's another reason for optimism, right? So my daughters will undoubtedly have, when they get home from school, will undoubtedly have an arts and crafts project related to Earth Day. And I think that will be my Earth Day highlights, will be arts and crafts with my daughters. And that's another great kind of reason for optimism, right? Because I think what we're seeing is those younger generations, this is front and center of their minds. My 10-year-old daughter coming home talking to me about, palm oil or plastic pollution. So I do think we are just seeing this, this generational effect as well. So arts and crafts on Earth Day is a great sign why we should be optimistic as this next generation comes through. It really holds us to account for the things that we're doing to the planet. And I think, will only help us to accelerate the positive changes that we need.
So both spending the day doing things, reminding ourselves and actually working towards a better planet. Thank you both. Of course, we should celebrate our progress on Earth Day. But we should also be aware of the challenges. Ben, as you've said, your daughters are reminding you of this every day that we have and that still lie ahead. By harnessing the power of positive tipping points, and I remember the three things I'm taking away with: affordability, attractiveness, and accessibility. So by harnessing those positive tipping points, we can continue to push towards a more sustainable future. Again, thanks for joining us on Tarmar Talks Circular. Ben and Micah, your insights have been invaluable in shedding light to the potential of positive tipping points in shaping a more sustainable future. And thank you to our audience for listening. Remember, every action, no matter how small, has the potential to tip the scales towards a more sustainable future. Let's keep the conversation going, and together, let's make Earth Day 2024 a turning point for positive change.
Thanks for having us, Mithu.
Thanks, Mithu.